And I'm joined right now by my good friend Scott Dochtman from The Athletic. And I think we know what we're going to be talking about, Scott. I mean, it's weird that, you know, even in the middle of summer, we can still have topics to talk about. And of course, the big news with the Big Ten adding USC and UCLA. I mean, it was weird how it just unfolded throughout the day. But I'm just curious, Scott. I mean, did you see something like this coming, or I mean, should people be really shocked, or was there more to it than we just knew, or what can we say?
Yeah, I think I was pretty shocked by this move. This was not one that I expected. This was something that I thought maybe a year ago was anticipated, and then ultimately dissuaded when they decided to go with an alliance between or among the Big Ten, Pac-12 and ACC conferences. But you know, I started getting rumblings of something big happening on Wednesday night, and I just wasn't sure what. I mean, the BTN and the Big Ten office, everybody went dark. Even people kind of clue me in once in a while, you know, ghosted me. That was a little unusual. So I was really kind of surprised then on Thursday when it just seemed like something big was going to happen, and we didn't know if it was going to be the media rights deal going down, the potential for announcing divisions, potentially would Kevin Warren change professions. All those things were going through my mind, but then ultimately when we found out what it was, which was USC and UCLA joining the Big Ten, it was very surprising. But, you know, when you get kind of in the heat of the moment of what we need to do with at The Athletic, you know, you kind of forget your shock and just kind of move forward. But
right.
Still, a day later here, I'm pretty surprised by everything. Still, it's starting to sink in, but it's still a little surprising.
Well, what can we say was the reason for this? Like you said, it was just a couple of months ago where these two conferences were talking about, like you said, the alliance, and we were wondering, okay, probably that means that, you know, they probably would find a week during the season in the non-conference where, you know, they, you know, play each other for one non-conference game, just like we see sometimes in college basketball. But what can we say? What changed the whole plan of basically, you know, scrapping the alliance and adding USC and UCLA?
This really started on the USC-UCLA front, and part of that is you look at the revenue figures generated by their conferences. The Pac-12 was falling way behind. The Pac-12 in the pre-COVID year, which is the last one where you have true figures, Pac-12 schools were making on average $20 million less than schools in the Big Ten, and that's including an Illinois or a Purdue that isn't necessarily a high revenue club, but they're making more than USC or Oregon when it comes to their conference affiliation. So I think USC in particular started the negotiation because it wanted to be what it is, which is a blue blood program, a legacy program in the heart of the nation's second biggest media market, that when it is good and on television, it has a value that's beyond what the remaining members of the league have there at the Pac-12. So it really wanted to have that kind of influence and power, and it approached the Big Ten, and the Big Ten wasn't about to turn it down. I mean, because the Big Ten is about to enter into a new phase of its media rights negotiations, and those negotiations will include a much bigger payout when you include two teams from the Pac-12, namely USC and UCLA. So that's really where this started. Now, if you want to talk about the alliance, in some ways, it was a reactionary move by three conferences to what happened a year ago around this time when Texas and Oklahoma left the Big 12 for the SEC. So they linked arms. They talked about doing things together collectively, and they have, but not necessarily in sports. And in particular, football, the Big Ten has decided not to go with an 8-game schedule and play more alliance games, but instead continue with its 9-game schedule because the Big Ten's ratings are so much greater than the other two leagues. So the alliance was more of a handshake agreement, and therefore it got blown up fairly quickly.
We'll talk a little bit about what this means for TV deals, Scott, but I want to touch on, you know, what is, it was only barely 10 years ago, 8-9 years ago, when the news came out about, you know, them adding Rutgers and Maryland, the Big Ten. How is the how is this different in some ways? I mean, describe the magnitude of this one. I mean, not to say that when Rutgers and Maryland joined, it wasn't a big deal, but this has way more implications, it seems like, to me, with adding USC and UCLA to the Big Ten.
No question, this is a much different move, because you're talking about an elite power in sport, and one that resonates. And in particular, USC, but I don't think you can ignore UCLA from that equation either, whether it's football or all the Olympic sports that it's such a powerhouse in. And because when you're talking about Maryland and Rutgers, they were added for largely business reasons.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about getting BTN into the number one market, New York City, but also in the nation's capital in Baltimore to an extent. And but Rutgers doesn't necessarily carry New York City as much as USC is so embedded to Los Angeles, and UCLA is as well. So this is a powerhouse move. This is similar to what we saw with Nebraska joining the Big Ten, which felt, you know, kind of the ramifications of a nation, and you know, and true powerhouses leaving. And because now with Rutgers in Maryland, I mean, Rutgers was part of a G5 league, but Maryland leaving the ACC, it never felt like the ACC was going to crumble or dramatically change from that. Whereas with this situation, USC and UCLA, it has the Pac-12 scrambling, mm-hmm. because its primary properties now are going to a different conference.
Scott Docterman from The Athletic joining me right now here on The Real Sports Hour, talking the expansion of the Big Ten, adding USC and UCLA. Scott, I mean, I don't know if we know figures, but like you said, the other big thing is this deal was done before, you know, the new TV rights deal was set in place. And I heard somewhere, was it the Pac-12, their TV deal still goes for another 15 years or something like that? I mean, just adding the Los Angeles market, I mean, the Big Ten was already well known for doing so well in TV revenue. Just how much does this increase that revenue for all these schools?
Significantly. It's hard to put a specific number on it today, but
right.
The number that was bandied around was about $1 billion per year for their media rights agreement before this move. Mm-hmm. And that was going to include Fox and its family of networks, and then whatever secondary primary channel, linear channel, and cable network it was going to gain as media partners. Mm-hmm. Now you're looking at, I wouldn't be surprised if that goes up at least 20%.
Wow.
Because you're talking about a valuable piece of property and inventory, and especially USC in football, but UCLA as well. And you're looking at games added to your league schedule: USC at Ohio State, Penn State at USC, Michigan, Wisconsin, Iowa, teams like that that resonate globally. That this really alters that outcome of what it can mean financially. I mean, again, you're looking back a couple of years ago, the Big Ten was pulling in right around $53 million.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have the current figures from the 22 fiscal year, but in the pre-COVID year, about $53 million per school from the Big Ten. The Pac-12 was right around $32 million. So the gulf was going to widen.
Mm-hmm.
The Big Ten's media rights, again, are up in 2023. That's when the new deal will be struck. Now, the Pac-12 is a year after that, in 2024,
okay.
Whereas the ACC is
the
way out.
ACC, that's right.
2036.
That was the one I was thinking.
So
of.
This means for that they were able to get out without, and they will start in the Big Ten in 2024. That means that they won't have to worry about different things like, paying any kind of, severance to the Big 12 or Pac-12. So it really is a fascinating development, and especially now with the Pac-12 looking at possible expansion to replace USC and UCLA.
Well, that's my next question, Scott, is there's been rumors or reports, but as far as adding USC and UCLA, the people were wondering, okay, what does this mean for teams like Oregon, Washington, the Utah, the Arizona schools? How many will go to the Big Ten? Will the Big 12 step in? The other one is Notre Dame keeps popping up too, but let's focus on the rest of the Pac-12. I mean, do we see the Big Ten adding anything either now or waiting for a while until they really do anything else?
It's a great question. As of today, it's reached a pause. Now, what does that mean for a week down the road? We really don't know at this point. You wonder how aggressive the Big Ten will be when it comes to program acquisition. Will it go after? I think Oregon and Washington are, you know, the next two when it comes to revenue potential. They're in major markets, in particular Washington is, but you also have Nike money in Oregon. So there is some potential there if that's the path they want to go into. As you mentioned, you also have Utah, Colorado, the Arizona schools. They're all AAU members, so you do have that ability to slide in because academics does play a role with both UCLA and USC being AAU institutions as well, research consortium. So I think that what's next is it's a kind of a holding pattern when it comes to that. I think you look at you know, what's the Pac-12 going to do, and I think what maybe the Big 12 might want to do.
Right.
I think is the next part of this discussion, because with the Pac-12, it announced today that it plans to look into expansion. So, you know, does it mean that it goes after Big 12, current Big 12 schools, or Mountain West schools that fit that slot, such as a San Diego State? That's where they can get back to Southern California. But finally, the Big 12 may decide it's time to start looking ahead and going after Pac-12 schools, maybe Colorado again, maybe Utah, the Arizona schools. So I think there's a lot of you know, fluidity in this environment, but it's something that's not going to lack for drama over the next week to a couple of months.
How does Notre Dame fit all of it? Is it different for that situation than, like you said, with the Pac-12 or the Big 12, what they are going to do?
It's different in a lot of ways because it is the number one marketable team out there that's not connected to specifically a conference. It's independent, but it has more potential than any other school out there. And if you're the Big Ten, you will absolutely want to go after this school if there's any opportunities. And then I think what Notre Dame has to do is be cognizant of what the landscape is doing right now, which is the Big Ten and the SEC have consolidated power within this college football landscape. And is it going to tilt the field so heavily in their favor that Notre Dame's independence establishes it as being more irrelevant in the current structure? So I think that's really something that's got to be under watch right now for Notre Dame, because if its influence does wane, it needs to join a conference. And right now the Big Ten, it appears to be one that it's always made sense geographically and like-minded institutions. But now I think that there is some reality that it has to weigh independence versus conference affiliation.
Scott Docterman from The Athletic joining me right now here in the Real Sports Hour. Scott, I know that 2024 is when USC and UCLA are expected to join. There had been, I don't want to say, you know, it's probably been rumors or people were throwing around the idea that do you get rid of divisions? And especially now when you add two more teams, what do we know as far as, you know, how, I mean, this probably is going to really impact the scheduling. I mean, do we probably see the end of divisions in the Big Ten? I mean, we saw the ACC is going to get rid of it next year, not this season, but next year. But what does this mean for scheduling and how this is all really going to work?
The Big Ten is going to get rid of divisions. I spoke to several athletic directors at the league meetings, and all of them were in favor of ditching them. You know, primarily for multiple reasons. One, and this was before UCLA and USC joined league, of course, and primarily to ensure that they have more teams qualify for an extended college football playoff, which everybody expects to happen. Also to have a more of a true championship game that's not reliant necessarily upon half the league not having that opportunity. But also to cycle through more games and more teams in this schedule. And so divisional play is a hindrance on that part of things. And I can assure you that there is a lot of interest in seeing USC cycle through the Big Ten without having anything cut off regarding divisional play. I think they want to see more USC versus Penn State, Ohio State, than seeing USC play those teams once every 4 years versus playing Illinois, for instance, every year.
Right.
So I think in large part that's really the focus is once these two teams, and then we'll see what happens beyond that, come under play, then it's going to be a matter of, you know, chipping away and figuring out what's the best type of schedule. They will continue to play nine games. That has been established. There will not be divisional play. That also has been established. But how many teams are going to be considered permanent opponents,
right,
versus how many teams are going to be considered rotational opponents? And that's yet to be determined, because we're not sure what the final number is going to be when that 2024 season kicks off.
Absolutely. Scott, I want to ask about the non-revenue sports. I mean, we know what implications this has for the college football world, even a little bit in the basketball world, with what UCLA making the championship, the Final Four just a couple of years ago, and USC has been to the tournament multiple times within the last couple of years on men's basketball. But what does adding UCLA and USC do for the non-revenue sports like baseball or softball? You mentioned UCLA with the Olympic sports that they have as well. How does this really add to the Big Ten in some ways that people may not kind of really be thinking about, really?
I think everybody automatically jumps to the logistical hurdles of travel concerns and costs. But I think the opportunity to play in Southern California against a couple of the best programs to establish Olympic athletes, I think is something that most Olympic sports players and coaches would embrace wholeheartedly. I mean, you look at the numbers of Olympians, of champions that they provide at USC and UCLA and all these different sports, from track and field, softball, to baseball. It's striking. I think, and the opportunity for Big Ten teams to go to California to play against these teams, to show it off, I think it's something that you can sell as a recruiting mechanism, but it's also something that your athletes will really enjoy, because a lot of those games now can be televised or streamed live. So it's a really big, important piece of this for the Big Ten. But in basketball, you know, there are some challenges. We've seen them over the years with the addition of Maryland and Rutgers as far as travel and games all times of night and day. But, you know, that it's going to be the same type of situation out west. My guess is in basketball and the Olympic sports is there will be more travel partners, that it'll be more of a one-trip, two-game situation, say in basketball, where a team like Iowa might play USC on a Thursday and then UCLA on a Saturday night,
right,
or something like that. That'd be my guess as far as what the travel situation will look like.
Scott Docterman from The Athletic joining me right now here in the Real Sports Hour. Scott, I guess one last question. I know that I'm guessing we all agree that this is not done, but and who knows what's going to happen. But are we thinking that, in your mind, do we see the two super conferences, really, that it's the Big Ten and the SEC? I mean, is this where this is all headed?
Yes and no.
I
think that they have already established themselves as the premier conferences, and that's in revenue potential and in prominence. And I think what you're going to see is whether they grab more properties, which I think is what we call universities these
right.
days in this environment. I don't know what that number is going to be. It could be 16 like it is currently. It could be 22 for each league.
Right.
But what it does is it forces the other conferences, the Power Five conferences, to really evaluate what they have and what's important to them. And, do they stand pat? Does the Pac-12 decide to be the Pac-10 again? Or, who does it try to go after? Does it shrink the power structure to maybe four conferences instead of five? And mm-hmm. is it one extra one? You know, there's going to be a lot of dynamics in play here. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much longer it'll go before we figure it out, but I do know that there is a shifting landscape, and anything is open. And finally, I think the ACC structure is one that bears watching, because they have a grant of rights through 2036.
Right.
But I can't imagine that there are schools like Clemson and Florida State, Miami, Virginia Tech, among others, that are either excited about this what's going on, mm-hmm. and probably nervous.
Right.
To go along with it, because it does impact them from revenue generation to influence and ultimately competition.
Absolutely. Scott Dochterman from The Athletic, kind enough to join us here on the Real Sports Hour. Scott, it's great to hear from you, and hopefully we can talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks for having me on, Josh.
You bet.